Welcome to the Back Asswards Podcast. We are the Back Asswards Boys. I'm Kyle. I use he, they pronouns. And joining me from our Colorado studio is Arden.
And I am sitting at the table at the diner on the corner. And I use he, him
pronouns. That's him in the corner. That's him in the spotlight losing his religion.
Oh my God.
Well, tonight, guys, gals, and NB pals, I am going to be continuing on with our JFK series with part 8. This week, we're going to talk about a bit about Oswald's marksmanship. We're going to talk about the trial of Clay Shaw, who is the only person to ever be brought to trial for involvement in the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And we're also going to talk a bit about the CIA, and we're also going to talk a bit about the Secret Service, and we're really going to put that one to bed. We brought them up a bit earlier in the series, and now it's time to put that baby down.
And cut here's the thing.
Jesus Christ.
And here's the thing, folks. You guys probably know this from hearing the episode last week, or our last JFK episode. My brain was officially melted in the last episode. I think that's part of the reason why my intro today was also kind of brain melting. But nonetheless... I am very, very excited to continue on this JFK train. We are discovering so many things. And again, just to kind of bring up where we left you last episode, the feeling between at least Kyle and I right now is the more that we learn about this, the less that we know about it. Even though some things are becoming more clear, the entire picture becomes more unclear. And so I'm excited to continue down that train tonight to see if we can make sense of what's around us right now, because last episode didn't help.
Yeah, we're going to see whether or not these waters clear up any at the end of this episode. I don't have high hopes. but while the waters might not be clear, our sources, we make sure that they are clear on this show.
Yes, we do.
And the first stop on the research train is always our good friend, Wikipedia.
Because we stan Wikipedia on this motherfucking podcast.
Yeah, find yourself in the place to do so. Go ahead and throw them a few bucks. I am sure that they could use it. I used their pages on the John F. Kennedy assassination conspiracy theories. That has been a mainstay for this series.
Mm-hmm.
And I also used their page on Mortal Error, which is a book. I also used an article from the Will Bunch newsletter called Why a JFK Murder Bombshell Landed with a Thud. I used a CNN article called One JFK Conspiracy Theory That Could Be True. And I also used an article from karws.gso.uri.edu titled JFK Conspiracy Theories Primer.
Looks like you had to go on the Wayback Machine for that one.
I did, yes.
Yes, I love it when the Wayback Machine makes an appearance in the sources. Perfect.
One of the greatest resources on the internet in this day.
Absolutely.
That Wikipedia.
For real. I was just about to say.
But guys, despite using the Wayback Machine, we are not scholars, and we are probably going to get some things wrong.
Like saying that the Wayback Machine is one of the most powerful things on this planet.
We are also not linguists. We are probably going to say some things wrong.
Like saying that the Wayback Machine is not one of the most powerful things on this planet. What am I saying?
Now, hold on to your asses and get your tinfoil hats, because things are about to get backwards.
I think the perfect way to describe this moment in our podcast is we are very much in the deep end of the pool, and we are fucking swimming for our lives out here in a sea of disinformation and a little bit of information. So,
And Professor Kyle has a 50-gallon bucket, and he is just dumping more water into the pool. So...
Let's just hop right into it. Honestly, I'm so excited. I'm so happy to be here. This has been one of my favorite series. Let's do it.
The Warren Commission examined the capabilities of the Carcino rifle and ammunition, as well as Oswald's military training and post-military experience, and determined that Oswald had the ability to fire three shots within a time span of 4.8 to 5.6 seconds.
Oh, yep. Uh-huh.
According to their report, an army specialist using Oswald's rifle was able to duplicate the feat and even improved on the time. The report also states that the Army Infantry Weapons Evaluation Branch test-fired Oswald's rifle 47 times and found that it was quite accurate, comparing it to the accuracy of an M14 standard-issue rifle at the time. Also contained in the commission report is the testimony by Marine Corps Major Eugene Anderson, confirming that Oswald's military records showed that he qualified as sharpshooter in 1956.
My face is itchy, dude. My face is itchy because I'm trying to hold it back. But, like, this is from the Warren Commission, dude. And I'm sorry, but I'm eight parts into this fucking series, and I don't believe a goddamn word that comes out of the Warren Commission anymore. Oh, my God.
According to official Marine Corps records, Oswald was tested on shooting in December of 1956, scoring 212, which is slightly above the minimum qualification as a sharpshooter, which, as we talked about in part two, I believe, that's the middle of the road, right?
Correct.
Ranking. Mm-hmm. There's three rankings, and that would be the middle of the road. But in May of 1959, so his more recent test, he scored only 191 points, which classified him in the lower designation of marksman.
And this is so important. And it's something that we've talked about and that we've kind of hinted at, but this is the first time it's like really coming up in one of the outlines. Like, this is so fucking important to take into consideration here. Because again, what have we been talking about for the past couple of episodes? The only way that the Warren Commission theory works is if Lee Oswald is the only shooter, and then beyond that, if the magic bullet theory is the correct theory, right? That's the only way that this works.
Insane shot to make.
And what's insane about it, furthermore, is that this is the guy. This is the skills behind the man who shot the president. Who there are three bullet casings next to his gun in the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository, according to them. And this is what he was able to do as a marksman.
And again, remember, in his other assassination attempt on the general, whose name I'm totally blanking on right now,
right?
He fully missed from way closer at a stationary target.
You are exactly right, Kyle. You did bring that up in part two because there was another assassination attempt that he had and he full on missed. You're exactly right. Crazy. Crazy that this is their guy. They're like, this is the guy.
This is our man. That's your man? That's him.
That's him. Dude, they planted their flag so hard at the top of this hill. They were like, it's Lee Oswald, dude. It's him.
Despite Oswald's air quote confirmed marksmanship in the United States Marine Corps, conspiracy theorists like Walt Brown and authors such as Richard H. Popkin contend that Oswald was a notoriously poor shot, that his rifle was inaccurate, and that not one goddamn reconstruction of the event has ever been able to duplicate his ability to fire the three shots within the time frame given by the Warren Commission.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no way, dude.
And again, I talked about this a little bit earlier in the series. I have a bit of experience with guns. I don't shoot them all the time, but I have.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you could get three shots off in that time frame.
Yeah.
Like, physically, you can make that happen.
Yes.
To do it with any sort of accuracy at that range, absolutely not.
With that type of rifle as well. Mm-hmm. This is a bolt action rifle, dude. Mm-hmm. Like that, you have to move your body in order to click that thing back to reload the chamber and then point your gun back in the direction that you're going to shoot. You're telling me three of those, three happened in like 5.7 mm-hmm. seconds. No shot.
Even if you give him the first one, because the first one is already like cocked and loaded.
Right. And he's aimed, right?
But still, the math doesn't math on that.
No.
No. As we know, the Warren Commission concluded that there is no evidence that Oswald was involved in any conspiracy directed to the assassination of the president. I've said this bullshit several times over the course of this series now.
Right.
The commission came to this conclusion after examining Oswald's Marxist and pro-communist background, including his defection to Russia, the New Orleans branch of the Fair Play for Cuba committee he had organized, and the various public and private statements that he made espousing Marxism. Some conspiracy theorists have argued that Oswald's pro-communist behavior was in fact a carefully planned ruse and part of an effort by the United States intelligence agencies to infiltrate left-wing groups and conduct counterintelligence operations in communist countries.
No.
Others speculate that Oswald was either an agent or an informant of the United States government and that he may have been trying to expose the plot behind the assassination. Okay. Oswald's the good guy.
Right. Okay. First of all, I don't think that that's why he went to Russia. I don't think that that's why that happened. If I'm just speaking right off the top,
But why was he able to come back so easy then?
Come back to the United States?
Yeah, we literally paid him to come back.
Well,
during the Red Scare.
So this is alleging that Oswald was on the inside the whole time of the United States, was in cahoots with the United States when he went to Russia.
I mean, it's not impossible.
Because I more so kind of see, and this is what I wanted to talk about, and maybe this will help us with this conversation, but as you were reading this section, this is what I find so difficult and so interesting when we talk about Lee Oswald, right? Because there is a huge part of me that's like, there's no way that a dude who is a Marxist communist got a repatriation loan. You know what I mean?
Who had explicitly publicly said he was going to give United States military secrets to Russia.
At the U.S. Embassy. He said that at the U.S. Embassy.
He said this. Blatantly.
At the embassy.
And they're giving him a repatriation loan after, what, 3 years? No.
But here is also the thing is that, and I guess this kind of goes along with this theory, is like, I think that the communism and the Marxist stuff is bullshit. I think it's a lie. I don't think he was actually feeling that way. I don't think that those were his actual political views. And maybe I'm out on an island here. I feel like it's fake. I feel like it's to make him kind of a fall guy. And especially like when he gets murdered on television by Jack Ruby, like people didn't care about fucking communists or Marxists. They were looked at as like lower back in that day, especially.
Yes. Yeah. And so
like, I think it's all kind of a ploy, which I guess would put him on the inside in cahoots with the United States. I don't know. You know what? Maybe I just didn't expect this outline to blow my mind as much as the last one, but I guess that's what this is. I guess that's what's happening.
I love that I literally just watched you walk in an entire circle with that thought process.
Dude. Oh,
that's
man.
Me for the last 2 months. Dude, you're walking in circles, man.
Oh God. I guess I don't know. Again, the more I learn, the less I know. We're on page four. Oh man, I'm so sorry.
You're so good. Oswald denied ever shooting anyone and declared that he was just a patsy.
Just a patsy!
Dallas Police Department Chief Jess Curry said, quote,
"I'm not sure about it. No one has ever been able to put Oswald in the Texas School Book Depository with a rifle in his hand."
Which is something that you brought up last week, right, Kyle? Like, nobody can place him there.
No, people can place him on, like, the ground floor. But how is he making it down six stories?
Because like, doesn't he have only like a minute and 20 seconds to like exit the school book depository or something like that
before he's sighted outside? Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like he perfectly avoided the police officer that was on the first floor and blah, blah, blah. And the stairs were not occupied. Like, whatever. Like, it was weird. It was a weird circumstance, right?
Yeah.
Strange behavior.
When asked to account for himself at the time of the assassination, Oswald claimed that he, quote,
went outside to watch pee parade. Out with William Shelley, a foreman at the depository in front. And I was at the front entrance to the first floor.
Initially, Texas School Book Depository Superintendent Roy Truly and Ocas Campbell, the depository vice president, said that they saw Oswald in the first floor storage room right after the shooting.
Right.
Some researchers theorize that a man who was filmed by Dave Wiegman Jr. of NBC and James Darnell of WBAP-TV, seen standing in front of the depository front steps during the assassination, who is referred to as Prayer Man, is Oswald.
That's an interesting thought. That kind of doesn't work with him like running away and shooting Tippett, though. Because what is he doing praying on the front of the Texas School Book Depository? Are you pulling up the picture? Should I pull this up?
Yeah, I'm pulling it up. Why don't you use that Zoom tool that Amazon has on the pictures? Look at that highlighted area on that book cover.
All right. I mean... Dude, that's hard evidence, bro. That's totally him.
How could you look at that and think that's not?
It's so totally him, dude. It's so obvious that it's Lee Oswald. You would be an idiot to not immediately recognize that as Lee Oswald.
No, you know who that? You know who it looks like? It looks like the mayor of Halloween Town.
Yeah, it does. Fucking Abraham Lincoln vampire slayer over here, you know?
Because dude, you're right. That doesn't work with him running away and shooting Officer Tippett, you know?
And like, just really quick, like, we just looked at this picture of who the Prayer Man is alleged to be, going back to what Kyle just read in this outline, that the Prayer Man could be Lee Oswald. Like, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the picture right now. It's...
I mean, at least you can see a person in this picture, unlike the fucking badge man picture, you know?
Yeah, that is very true. Very true. I will give it credit there.
Human. That is a human being.
Completely fair, Kyle. You're exactly right.
Oswald's role as an FBI informant was investigated by Lee Rankin and others of the Warren Commission, but their findings were inconclusive.
Dude, I mean... They didn't find anything. They didn't find anything in this investigation, dude. Useless. No.
Several FBI employees had made statements indicating that Oswald was indeed a paid informant, but the commission was unable to verify the veracity of these claims. So basically, there were multiple FBI agents that said, yes, Oswald was a paid informant. But because they never found a pay stub, they were like, oh. Because no shit, they're not writing a check for the assassination, taking his taxes out. Like, come on.
Dude, and I mean, like, this is the same government that we talked about in, I think it was in our first episode of the series, in Camelot, where... Like, literally, JFK just, like, went to Germany, and they just walked up to him, and they were like, hey, buddy, hey. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, that wasn't written down. They didn't fucking say that or, like, pay anybody to do that specifically. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff just happens.
Like, do you really think the FBI didn't know how to cover a paper trail at this point?
Do you think a paper trail existed to begin with, my
friend?
No,
of course not. Hello?
What are we talking? Who's there? Like, what are we talking about?
FBI agent James Hostie reported that his office's interactions with Oswald were limited to dealing with his complaints about being harassed by the Bureau for being a communist sympathizer.
Just, all right. Fine, almost, whatever.
Almost like they were making it seem like he was a communist sympathizer.
Dude. Whatever you guys say, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, I guess that's just how this game is played, you know?
In the weeks before the assassination, Oswald made a personal visit to the FBI's Dallas branch office with a hand-delivered letter, which purportedly contained a threat of some sort. But, controversially, Hostie destroyed the letter by order of J. Gordon Shanklin, his supervisor.
Okay, that's really fishy. That's really weird. That's really fucking weird. That's really weird that they would do that. I find that to be particularly fascinating. He hand delivers a letter by himself, threatens the FBI, and then the FBI shreds the letter. Crazy. Yeah.
They don't even keep a file just in case.
They don't even make a, they don't even make a report like, hey, this dude dropped off this letter.
Yeah. Is making a threat. You really think in 1960, the FBI would not follow up on that? Get out of my house.
Get out of my house, dude. That's crazy. You can't. No. No shot. Wow. Wowie wow wow.
Other researchers suggest that Oswald served as an active agent of the Central Intelligence Agency rather than the Federal Bureau of Investigations.
Right.
Often, as we were just talking about, pointing to how he attempted to defect to Russia but was able to return without difficulty and even received a repatriation loan from the State Department.
Right.
Insane.
Really? It. You know what? You brought it up like just a couple minutes ago, and it's been kind of on the back burner in my brain. And like, that is a really interesting point. I hadn't really fully considered that yet until you brought it up just recently.
It's weird.
It is weird. Because, I mean, okay, hold on. What year did he come back to the United States?
Geez, here. Give me 60
what,
seconds.
Yeah. Me. What year did he get his repatriation?
In 62.
In 1962, so a year mm-hmm. before the JFK assassination, give or take a couple months on either side, right?
Mm-hmm. So in 1960, he went to Russia, January of 1960, and then I don't have a specific month in here, but in 1962, he received the repatriation loan.
Okay, and so that's a year before JFK gets shot in Dealey Plaza.
Okay.
What was going on in 1962? What were like foreign affairs like? Were we in a war? The Cold War was going on?
I believe. No, the Cold War was like 64, I think. I mean, depending on who you ask, it's like 47 to 91. So, yeah, we were like right in the thick of the Cold War.
First American to orbit the Earth, Cuban Missile Crisis, Marilyn Monroe, rioting, University of Mississippi, President Kennedy, Consumer Bill of Rights, Space Needle.
Damn.
Marvel Spider-Man first appearance. Nice.
Nice.
Marilyn Monroe is found dead on August 5th.
Right.
Columbus Day storm, oral polio vaccine. Okay, so nothing, so no like major wars.
No, but so like, first man in so space, not, like that factors in. That was a huge part of the Cold War, was the space.
It was. And so that could have been like a lot of international. Because I'm trying to think of why they would give it. Because the way that I'm looking at it is that he's a former military United States citizen who wants to come back to the United States of America. And
right.
I feel like I'm trying to figure out if there's like something in the time period that the United States would have been like, yes, this is very valuable to us right now to get this young man back into the United States. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So perhaps there are tensions between Russia and the United States. I mean, when are there not? That contributed right. to that, you know?
I mean, maybe.
I'm trying to explain it away, but it makes more sense that
we were in the CIA. We were in the height of the Red Scare. There is simply no way.
Right. No. That because he was so outspoken about his communism, which again, I feel like it's a ploy. I feel like it's fake. I don't feel like he actually feels that way.
Interesting.
I don't.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. We'll see.
I think he's a liar, dude.
A former roommate of Oswald, James Bothello, who would later become a California judge, stated that in an interview with Mark Lane that he believed that Oswald was involved in an intelligence assignment in Russia, although Bothello did not mention this suspicion in his testimony to the Warren Commission years earlier.
Liar. An absolute liar. He's lying. He wants attention. No. He wants to sell a book. No.
Oswald's mother, Marguerite, often insisted that her son was recruited by an agency of the United States government and sent to Russia.
I'm going to back up here for a second from what I just said. I'm going to kind of back up. One sentence in an outline can really just change something, can it? Mm-hmm. Okay. Because he was young.
Keep in mind his relationship with his mother. They did not have the greatest relationship.
That is true. I do remember that from part two. But what is interesting is that he did join the military pretty young, right? Mm-hmm. If I'm not mistaken. It wouldn't surprise
literally months after officially coming out as a Marxist, he joins the United States military.
Right, because he read a bunch of Marxist shit when he was 16 or something, right? Mm-hmm. 15, 16, somewhere in there, and then he joined the military.
He was trying to join at 17 and was not allowed to, and so then he joined the second he turned 18, 3 days after.
And so it is an interesting set of circumstances. I don't necessarily disbelieve that Marguerite, Oswald's mother, would not have seen something like that. That's an interesting point.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
New Orleans District Attorney and later Judge Jim Garrison, who in 1967 brought Clay Shaw to trial for the assassination of President Kennedy, we're about to get there, don't worry, also held the opinion that Oswald was most likely a CIA agent drawn into the plot to be used as a scapegoat, even going as far as to say that Oswald genuinely was probably a hero.
I'm with you up until that last part.
Senator Richard Schweiker, a member of the United States Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, remarked that everywhere you look with Oswald, there's fingerprints of intelligence. Schweiker also told author David Talbot that Oswald was the product of a fake defector program run by the CIA.
So, essentially alleging that the CIA had planned this for a while, going so far as to, build things into the structural integrity of the United States to allow this young man to go through this fake customs program or whatever to come back to the United States to be the scapegoat for killing JFK, which is why Jack Ruby kills him after 2 days, which is why he shoots J.D. Tippit, which is why he's the fall guy, which is why they said in less than 24 hours that this is their guy. You know what I mean? The CIA deliberately planned this and built things in place to make that happen.
And I wouldn't go as far as to say that the CIA did all of this with the intention that he was going to kill JFK on November 22nd, 1963. I don't think it goes that far. I think it's we know the CIA was just playing around.
They were just wanted to see what would happen.
Do you think it would really be past them to have a program to just have something like a fucking scapegoat secret sleeper agent on the level that Oswald would be in this scenario, just in case we ever need to do something, whether it's kill the president, whether it's get a unruly senator out of the Senate, something.
And then it just so happened to be the right president to kill and the right scapegoat to just come along and be as loud and outspoken as he was.
Yeah.
So like it was just it was just a an alignment of the stars.
Well, no, because again, you know, I think some of these things, some of these statements could very easily, you know, some of these FBI interactions with him coming into the office and complaining, that shit is so easy to fake for them, you know? So they just plugged that in after. He was just, you know, their fall guy for whatever happened. This was, again, it was the Red Scare. So a communist fall guy makes a lot of sense, right? Just like how if they were setting something like this up in the early 2000s, it would be someone from the Middle East, right? They would have defected to Lebanon, right? And then come back. Mm-hmm. It's the exact, they were setting up something, right?
Well, yeah. And it's like,
it's a contingency plan more than a plan to specifically kill the president, right? That was set up 4 years ago.
Well, and that's, I agree with you, and like I'm following you up until the point where it's like, but like they had to want to kill Kennedy, and they had to have had a communist scapegoat, and I feel like that took a little bit more planning. I don't think that just like happened to be right place, right time.
I don't necessarily think it takes that much more planning. Because again, we already hated the communists, so if a communist was going to kill anybody, if the CIA needed anybody taken out, a communist doing it is going to have a lot less questions asked.
But I would also say that there weren't a lot of communists that were being outwardly violent, like assassinating world leaders at that point, especially in the United States of America.
But the United States wants you to think that there are, which is why they would set that up.
And I don't disagree with that. I'm also furthermore stating that I don't think that there were a lot of United States communists who would have went along with a government plot to kill the president. You see what I'm saying?
I agree with that because, yes, I don't think Oswald was a communist either.
That's what I'm saying. So it takes more planning. I don't think it's a right place, right time. Like, I think that they drafted him. I think that they planned that he was going to kill JFK after something happened. Do I know exactly where that pinpoint on the timeline is? Not necessarily. Probably Bay of Pigs. But it had to be planned.
Correct. And I think, and that's where I'm saying, they were just making a bunch of tools, and Oswald had been set up as one of these tools. And then when they decided, oh, we need to kill Kennedy, this is the tool for the job. That's what I'm saying, right?
Yes. Okay, perfect. All right, you and I are on the same page now. Excellent. Yes. Excellent, dude. I love it. I fucking love it, dude. These fucking episodes, Kyle.
Taking years off my life, dude.
Dude.
And another fucking nail in the coffin for this, Arden. Richard Sprague, who was the interim staff director and chief counsel to the United States HSCA, the House Select Committee on Assassinations, stated that if he had to do it over again, he would have investigated the Kennedy assassination by probing Oswald's ties to the Central Intelligence Agency.
Wow. That is a big thing to say, brother. My man Richard, dude.
Wait. There's another bombshell for you. This one's going to piss you off. In 1978, James Wilcott, who was a former CIA finance officer, testified before the HSCA that shortly after the assassination of President Kennedy, he was advised by fellow employees at the CIA post abroad that Oswald was a CIA agent who had received financial disbursements under an assigned cryptonym. Wilcott was unable to identify the specific case officer who had initially informed him of Oswald's agency relationship, nor was he able to recall the name of the cryptonym, but he named several employees of the post abroad with whom he believed he had subsequently discussed these allegations.
Okay.
Later that year, Wilcott and his wife, Elsie, who was also a former employee of the CIA, repeated those claims in an article in the San Francisco Chronicle.
What?
The HSCA investigated Wilcott's claims, including interviews with the chief and deputy chief of the station, as well as officers in finance, registry, the Soviet branch, and counterintelligence, and concluded in the 1970 report that they were not worthy of belief. Despite its official policy of neither confirming nor denying the status of agents, both the CIA itself and many officers working in the region at the time have unofficially dismissed the plausibility of any possible ties of Oswald to the agency.
What?
Robert Blakey, who was the staff director and chief counsel for the United States HSCA, supported the assessment in his conclusion as well.
So you have these two people who are like, he was definitely there, definitely was doing something, definitely was working there. And then you have everything else, everybody else being like, no, this never happened. That is so interesting that you have two, because they're married and they mm-hmm. both used to work at the CIA, and they're mm-hmm. the only two that are saying it, and everybody else who currently works at the CIA is like, no,
currently works at the CIA, and the CIA has a standing rule that they will never confirm or deny the status of agents.
Exactly.
But they are denying the status of this agent. They are explicitly saying this person was not a CIA asset.
They're saying that Oswald was not a CIA asset.
Correct. Which goes against official CIA rules.
Oh, so they're breaking their own... I see.
Yes.
So if I go up to them and I ask, is George Lopez a CIA agent? They have to say,
I cannot confirm or deny that.
I cannot confirm or deny that. And if they say no. Oh my God. Can you imagine? He killed JFK.
Yeah. Where was George Lopez on November 22nd, 1963?
Has anyone ever asked that question? I think that's the first original thing that's happened in the series.
How old is George Lopez? Listen, a 2-year-old can pull the trigger. That is all I'm saying, okay? That is all I'm saying.
We don't actually know what was in the paper bag. You know what I'm saying? We don't actually. We're
George Lopez with the gun. Oswald didn't pull the trigger. He just got the baby into position to pull the trigger. That is my bag Aswad stance.
We're just assuming that the bag that he said was for the curtain rods contained the gun. We don't know that. Wow.
Oh my God. Holy shit. Gayton Fonzie, who was an investigator for the HSCA, wrote that the investigators were pressured to not look into the relationship between Lee Harvey Oswald and the CIA. He stated that CIA agent David Atlee Phillips, using the pseudonym Maurice Bishop, was involved with Oswald prior to the Kennedy assassination in connection with his anti-Castro Cuban groups.
Interesting. So another connection alleging that he is connected to at least someone at the CIA. He's worked with people at the CIA is what this is saying.
Which would make him what we call a CIA asset, right?
I call him a patsy, you know?
In 1995, former U.S. Army intelligence officer and National Security Agency executive assistant John M. Newman published evidence that both the CIA and the FBI deliberately tampered with their files on Lee Harvey Oswald both before and after the assassination. Furthermore, he found that both agencies withheld information that might have alerted authorities in Dallas that Oswald posed a potential threat to the president.
Yes. Yes. I'm so glad that we're talking about this. I'm going to let you keep on cooking, but I'm so glad that you just said that.
Subsequently, Newman expressed the belief that the CIA chief of counterintelligence, James Angleton, was probably the key figure in the assassination. According to Newman, only Angleton had the access, the authority, and the diabolically ingenious mind to manage this sophisticated plot. However, Newman surmised that the cover operation was not under James Angleton, but under who, Arden? Alan Dulles.
No way, dude. No way. No way.
Alan Dulles, of course, the former CIA director, later Warren Commission member, and the man who was dismissed by John Fitzgerald Kennedy after what, Arden? After what? The Bay of fucking Pigs, dude.
Oh my God, dude. The CIA killed the president. Oh no, dude. Oh no. When you say it like that, Kyle, you know, I mean, what what am I supposed to do?
He was literally on the fucking Warren Commission, dude.
Dude, he was on the Warren Commission.
They were literally investigating themselves. The call is coming from inside the house.
Dude, dude, dude. I mean, I'm speechless. I don't know what to say. Like that. It just happened. That's the circumstance. You know what I mean? Again, going back to something that I said in part six, maybe I'll just illustrate this again really quick. The power of the CIA is insurmountable. Again, it would be crazy if you asked anyone that you know to do anything that the CIA asks anybody to do, because it's you asking them. If the CIA asks somebody to do something, there is a real threat and there is a real pressure behind that. And there is a real power behind it as well. And that is something that is so important to remember. Like Kyle just said, he's on the Warren Commission. The call is coming from inside the house. Oh my God. I can't. I'm losing my mind. How can I continue on? How am I supposed to do this for at least another two episodes, Kyle? How are we supposed to do this?
Let's take a little detour for a second. Let's breathe. Okay. Let's breathe.
All right.
We're gonna come back to Alan Dulles next week. Like okay. More right. In depth. It's okay. We're going to take a little breather here.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
I got to let some of the steam out a little bit in every episode, you know?
Dude, every single time I take off my over-the-ear headphones, there's steam releasing. There's a fire in there.
In 1977, the FBI released 40,000 files pertaining to the assassination of Kennedy, including one April 3rd, 1967 memorandum from Deputy Director Cartha DeLock to Assistant Director Clyde Tolson that was written less than 1 month after President Johnson learned from J. Edgar Hoover about CIA plots to kill Fidel Castro.
Damn. So they tell every president about MK Ultra pretty quick. They're like, hey, by the way, you have to sign this and you have to say that it's okay because we're the CIA and we're asking you to do that. Again, the point I just illustrated.
And if you don't, just remember that I went to college with the guy who makes your coffee every day.
And the Nazis helped us do all of this, by the way. So just in case you forgot about that as well. Again, a real threat behind there.
Mm-hmm. The CIA being involved at all, like you said, just has a level of threat attached to it.
Yes.
Just in general. This memorandum reads, quote,
Marvin Watson, advisor to President Johnson, called me late last night and stated that the president had told him, in an off moment, that he was now convinced that there was a plot in connection with the JFK assassination. Watson stated, the president felt like the CIA had something to do with this plot. What?
President Lyndon B. Johnson thinks that the CIA killed Kennedy.
Whoa. I didn't think that that's what I was reading when I started reading that quote. That's crazy. That is wild. Lyndon B. Johnson's like, I am.
My fellow Americans, I low key on the down low kind of think.
Don't let them hear I'm saying this.
I know that they're listening. And I know they're listening. But I think that JFK got shot by the CIA, my fellow Americans. They're coming for me.
Like, dude, what the fuck? That's crazy.
That's almost like, you know, it's almost like moving into like a really nice house, right? You've worked your whole life and you move into this house and you hear, you know, that, you know, there's like bears up on the mountain above the house, right? And you're like, okay, they're over there. We're fine. You know, I'll be okay. And then you move into the house and it turns out the bear is your butler.
Right. Yep.
You know, that's, and it's that's not a trained butler. It is a wild bear that is just your butler. you cannot control this bear.
And furthermore, every single time the bear interacts with you, it's like, you better fucking do what I say. Otherwise. Otherwise, I'm gonna go bear mode.
You know, the guy who owned this house 2 times ago died from a bear attack.
And if you say anything about the bear attacks, if you say anything, and then they just leave it at that, dude. And that's what's crazy. That's what's crazy. I'm pretty sure it's kind of like that, where they just kind of leave it at that. They're like, listen.
Yeah. Absolutely. They don't need to say anything else.
They're listening, dude.
But again, let's take a little break from the CIA for, I mean, not a full break, but let's take a break from Alan Dulles for just a minute. And let's talk about the trial of Clay Shaw.
Yes, I'm excited about this. I know nothing about this.
Someone we've mentioned a couple times at this point in the show, New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison began an investigation into the Kennedy assassination in 1966. And Garrison developed a theory of a plot that included a group of New Orleans residents in his jurisdiction.
Interesting. So, like, the state of Louisiana is somewhat involved in this now?
They just happened to live in New Orleans when they made the plot, you know?
Oh, I see. Okay. All right.
His 1988 book On the Trial of the Assassins discusses his prosecution of Clay Shaw for the assassination and was partially adapted by Oliver Stone for his 1991 film JFK.
Okay.
The final report of the Assassination Records Review Board, or the ARRB, stated that the film popularized a version of President Kennedy's assassination that features United States government agents from the FBI, the CIA, and the military as conspirators.
Oh, I see.
Journalist Rosemary James, whose article with Jack Dempsey and Dave Snyder in the New Orleans States item broke the news of the Garrison investigation, stating that because Garrison's theory evolved frequently, it was mockingly called the theory du jour by the media.
Wow. That's a really interesting response, too, because, again, if we have our tinfoil hats on, like, if this dude is saying that all of these government agencies are involved in the plot to kill JFK, the media response being so overwhelmingly like, fuck this theory. This is obviously not real. This is obviously not real. This is obviously not real. That's an interesting thing to happen in reaction to that. You know what I'm saying? You know, you, I mean, you get what I'm putting down?
Oh, I'm smelling what you're stepping in. Pamela Colliffe and Michael Hall summarized the theory held by Garrison and Stone for Texas Monthly by saying, quote,
"There is a secret government within our government, a cabal that in 1963 ordered the murder of a popular president, set up a patsy, installed its own puppet, and orchestrated an elaborate cover-up that included tampering with the corpse, destroying and suppressing evidence, and killing witnesses. Heading the cabal were some of the world's most powerful men, rich and corrupt industrialists, generals, and right-wing politicians. Down below was an eclectic group of mobsters, spooks, lowlifes, and anti-Castro extremists, many of whom were headquartered at 544 Camp Street in New Orleans, including Oswald, former FBI agent Guy Bannister, soldier of fortune David Ferry, and suspected CIA informant Clay Shaw. Together, in the summer of 1963, they plotted Kennedy's demise." What an excellent elevator pitch for the movie, honestly.
Yeah, dude.
I love it.
So soon after the assassination of President Kennedy, Oswald's activities in New Orleans, Louisiana, during the spring and summer of 1963 came under scrutiny. It's kind of why we brushed over it a bit in our Oswald episode. We talked about his New Orleans stay a little bit, but we're going to get into some of the details here.
Hell yeah.
3 days after the assassination, on November 25th, 1963, New Orleans attorney Dean Andrews told the FBI that he received a telephone call from a man named Clay Bertrand on the day of the assassination, asking him to defend Oswald. Andrews would later repeat...
On the day of the assassination...
The day of the assassination. And he repeated this claim in testimony to the Warren Commission. Also in late November of 1963, an employee of New Orleans private investigator Guy Bannister, named Jack Martin, began making accusations that fellow Bannister employee David Ferry was involved in the JFK assassination. Martin told the police that Ferry was supposed to have been the getaway pilot in the assassination.
Okay.
He said that Ferry had outlined plans to kill Kennedy and that Ferry might have taught Oswald how to use a rifle with a telescopic sight. Martin claimed that Ferry had known Oswald from their days in the New Orleans Civil Air Patrol and that he had seen a photograph at Ferry's home of Oswald in a Civil Air Patrol group. However, Ferry did deny any association with Oswald. So, Arden?
Yes, Kyle.
I'm going to go ahead and send you a picture here.
I've never been more scared of the Discord notification sound in my life. I'm speechless. Okay, let me look at this.
Now, go ahead and look at the far right first. Who is that on the far right? We've seen a few pictures of him so far.
Far right, this guy on the very end?
On the very end, yeah. Short sleeve, white shirt. I mean, they're all wearing the short. Yeah, in the back, no helmet.
Yeah, that's
and a little bit away from the group.
Right?
That is Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah, I recognize him. I didn't look at the top of the photo yet.
Yeah, and David Ferry is the second from the left with the helmet and the white shirt.
Right, I see him. Okay.
That is a photo of David Ferry and Lee Harvey Oswald in the New Orleans Civil Air Patrol in 1955.
So that is corroborated, I would say. So that's real. Okay. And this also raises something interesting. I was thinking this while you were saying it. This is part of what's blowing my mind is that you mentioned that Ferry might have taught Oswald how to shoot with a telescopic sight, right?
Right.
Which would And again, just roll with me here for a second. If Oswald is the only shooter, which he's not, but if he was the only shooter, he might have gotten better off of military record, improved from being a marksman by training with David Ferry off of military record or something, right?
Absolutely possible. I would not go as far as to say that is not in the realm of reality.
Yeah. Fascinating.
It was later discovered that Ferry had attended Civil Air Patrol meetings in New Orleans in the 1950s that were also attended by a teenage Lee Harvey Oswald.
Mm.
In 1993, the PBS television program Frontline obtained a photograph taken in 1955, 8 years before the assassination, that showed Oswald and Ferry at a Civil Air Patrol cookout with other Civil Air Patrol cadets.
That's the photo we just looked at, right?
Correct. Now, whether Oswald and Ferry's association in the Civil Air Patrol in 55 is relevant to their later possible assassination in 1963 is subject to some debate.
Mm.
But, I mean, they knew each other. Like
They knew each other, and we know that Lee Oswald went to New Orleans. We know that.
Yes.
We absolutely know those two things, which are very interesting connections to make. That's evidence. I think there's something there for sure.
Absolutely. Now, according to several witnesses, in 1963, both Ferry and Bannister were working for lawyer G. Ray Gill on behalf of Gill's client, New Orleans mafia boss Carlos Marcello. No. In an attempt to block Marcello's deportation to Guatemala.
Kyle.
On the afternoon of November 22nd, 1963, the day JFK was assassinated and the day that Marcello was acquitted in his deportation case, New Orleans private investigator Guy Bannister and his employee Jack Martin were drinking together at a local bar. On their return to Bannister's office, the two men got into a heated argument, and according to Martin, Bannister said something to which Martin replied, "What are you going to do? Kill me like you all did Kennedy." In response to this, Bannister drew his .357 Magnum revolver and pistol-whipped Martin several times.
Whoa.
And he was badly injured enough that he had to be taken by ambulance to Charity Hospital.
Damn. What the hell?
Earlier in the spring of 1963, Oswald had written to the New York City headquarters of the pro-Castro Fair Play for Cuba Committee, proposing to rent a small office at his own expense for the purposes of forming a FPCC branch there in New Orleans. We've talked about this.
Which they asked him not to do, by the way.
Yes.
And then he still did it.
He still did it. And as the sole member of the New Orleans chapter of the Fair Play for Cuba Committee, Oswald ordered 1,000 leaflets with the heading, "Hands off, Cuba," from a local printer. On August 16th of 1963, Oswald passed out Fair Play for Cuba leaflets in front of the International Trade Mart in New Orleans.
Oh, once again, putting him in New Orleans.
At least one of Oswald's leaflets had the address 544 Camp Street hand-stamped on it, apparently by Oswald himself. The address was in the Newman Building, which from October 1961 to February of 1962 housed the Cuban Revolutionary Council, which was a militant anti-Castro group. But around the corner and located in the same building with a different entrance was the address 531 Lafayette Street, the address of Guy Bannister Associates, the private detection agency run by Guy Bannister. Bannister's office was involved in anti-Castro and private investigative activities in the New Orleans era and in the New Orleans area, and a CIA file indicated in September of 1960, the CIA had considered using Guy Bannister Associates for the collection of foreign intelligence, but ultimately decided against it.
Wow. Okay. I mean, I do find it kind of interesting, and maybe you can help me understand this. Like, but like, if 544 Camp Street is one address and 531 Lafayette is a different address, what is the significance of those two being so close to each other?
Same building.
They're in the same building.
Same building, different addresses.
So I guess not completely different addresses, you know what I mean? It's the same building.
Yeah. Yes.
And so Oswald had 1,000 of these leaflets and he only hand stamped this address onto one of them.
Yes.
Crazy. That's interesting. Why did he do that? That seems very intentional, you know?
In the late 1970s, the HSCA investigated the possible relationship of Oswald to Bannister's office. While the committee was unable to interview Guy Bannister because he died in 1964, the committee did interview his brother, Ross Bannister. And Ross told the committee that his brother had mentioned seeing Oswald hand out Fair Play for Cuba literature on one occasion. And Ross theorized that Oswald had used the 544 Camp Street address on his literature to embarrass Guy.
What?
Guy Bannister's secretary, Delphine Roberts, would later tell author Anthony Summers that she saw Oswald at Bannister's office and that he filled out one of Bannister's agent application forms. She said that Oswald had come back a number of times and that he seemed to be on familiar terms with Bannister and the office. We're almost there. Don't worry. It's going to make sense.
All right.
The HSCA investigated Robert's claims and said that because of contradiction in Robert's statements to the committee and lack of independent corroboration by many of her statements, the reliability could not be determined. So again, in 1966, New Orleans District Attorney Jim Garrison had begun this investigation into the assassination. And this investigation led him to conclude that these right-wing extremists, which included Dave Ferry and Guy Bannister, were involved with elements of the CIA in a conspiracy to kill Kennedy. He would later claim that the motive for the assassination was anger over Kennedy's attempts to obtain a peace settlement in Cuba and in Vietnam. Two CIA hotspots.
Mm-hmm.
Garrison also came to believe that the New Orleans businessman Clay Shaw was part of the conspiracy and that Clay Shaw had used the pseudonym Clay Bertrand.
Mm-hmm.
Garrison further believed that Shaw, Bannister, and Ferry conspired to set up Oswald as a patsy in the JFK assassination. On March 1st, 1967, Garrison arrested and charged Shaw with conspiring to assassinate President Kennedy.
Wow. A lot of time later.
Yeah, on January 29th of 1969, Clay Shaw was brought to trial on these charges, and the jury found him not guilty.
Not guilty, huh? They brought him to trial, and he was found not guilty, even after all of that.
Yes.
Even though he used a pseudonym.
Allegedly.
Allegedly? So that there wasn't a lot of evidence or something?
Basically. Because again, the CIA
paper trail? Yeah.
Has learned to not leave a fucking paper trail.
Yeah, they made a mistake by not burning 20,000 pages of MK Ultra. You know what I mean?
And like... what better way to cover their asses when investigating these private companies as possibilities to use as agents? What better way to cover their asses than to be like, oh yeah, no, we investigated them and they're not up to snuff. We're not going to use them. And then go back and say, hey, you're up to snuff. We're going to use you, you know?
Mm-hmm. That's crazy. It literally, like, the CIA operates like a criminal organization.
Yeah, they do.
Crazy.
Pardon.
Kyle.
Let's talk about Alan Dulles a little bit.
Okay, we've come back. Full circle. I love it.
Little donut of conspiracy theories here.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but that was the trial of Clay Shaw, the only man to be tried for the assassination of the president, and he was found not guilty.
Not guilty. I say.
One conspiracy theory, well, many conspiracy theories, suggest that a secret shadow government, including wealthy industrialists and right-wing politicians, ordered the assassination of Kennedy. We have said this before.
Right.
Peter Dale Scott has indicated that Kennedy's death allowed for policy reversals desired by secret government officials to escalate the United States military involvement in Vietnam. In JFK versus Alan Dulles, author Greg Polgrain describes an attempt by America's Rockefeller family to gain control over West Iran gold mines in Indonesia, in particular the subsequently gold-rich Grasberg mine. Polgrain speculates that President Kennedy's close relationship with Indonesian President Sukarno and planned 1964 United States-Indonesian summit could have led to Indonesia gaining independence to West Iran, making it difficult for Rockefeller-owned Freeport Sulfur to gain control of the mines.
Oh my God, dude.
Polgrain contends that Alan Dulles, who had ties to the Rockefellers through his employment at Sullivan and Cromwell, organized the assassination on the Rockefellers' behalf to eliminate Kennedy's interference by easing Lee Harvey Oswald's return to the United States and getting him a job at the Texas School Book Depository before instigating a coup in Indonesia with the cooperation of military officer Suharto to discredit the Communist Party of Indonesia. The subsequent nationwide massacres of Suharto's assumption of the presidency, Polgrain purports, led to Freeport securing the mines with the approval of Suharto's pro-Western government. The Rockefellers killed Kennedy.
Dude, and used the CIA. Wow. Why is this the most sense that 8 episodes have made to me? That is crazy. Because
it makes sense and I hate it, dude.
That's crazy to think about. Definitely plausible. I'm going to let it rest right there. I'm going to take the steak off of the grill and let it rest on that for a second. I feel like that's plausible. Sounds very believable.
Well, Alan Dulles may have done things for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
In his biographical book, The Devil's Chessboard, Alan Dulles, the CIA, and the Rise of America's Secret Government, David Talbot examines Dulles' career. Talbot also posits that Alan Dulles orchestrated the assassination of President Kennedy at the behest of corporate leaders, though on the bias of their perceiving Kennedy as a threat to national security instead of to primarily secure any specific business interests. According to Talbot, Dulles lobbied the new president, Lyndon Johnson, to have himself appointed to the Warren Commission.
What?
And Talbot says that Alan Dulles also arranged to make Lee Harvey Oswald the person responsible for the assassination. This book asserts that the conspirators behind John Kennedy's death also murdered his brother, Robert Kennedy, who the conspirators perceived to be a wild card and an uncontrollable threat that would reveal the official plot.
I mean, hey, he was attorney general at the time, mm-hmm. and he was kind of good at his job. Mm-hmm. And also, this is his brother. You don't think he's going to, like, try really hard on this one? You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And so they kill him before he can fucking actually investigate it? You know, again, very plausible, kind of believable.
A little bit.
The waters are definitely clearer over in this section of the pool.
A little muddier over in some other sections now, though.
Yeah.
So, and I'm sure this is not the last time we're going to talk about Alan Dulles on this fucking podcast.
No.
But let's talk about one other branch that a lot of people bring up when talking about the assassination of JFK. The Secret Service.
The Secret Service. And everybody knows the Secret Service. Not so much of a secret anymore, is it?
Not quite. The HSCA reported that it investigated alleged Secret Service complicity in the assassination, and it concluded that the Secret Service was not directly involved. However, the HSCA declared that, quote,
the Secret Service, hold on. The Secret Service was deficient in the performance of its duties. Among its findings, the HSCA noted, one, that President Kennedy had not received adequate protection in Dallas. Two, that the Secret Service possessed information that was not properly analyzed, investigated, or used by the Secret Service in connection with the president's trip to Dallas. And three, that the Secret Service agents in the motorcade were inadequately prepared to protect the president from a sniper.
I think all that's fucking fair to say.
That is pretty fucking fair to say.
Especially if they were driving around with a windshield that already had a fucking bullet hole in it, you know?
Allegedly, right?
The HSCA specifically noted that no actions were taken by the agent in the right front seat of the presidential limousine named Roy Kellerman to cover the president with his body, although it would have been consistent with Secret Service procedure for him to have done so. The primary function of that agent was to remain at all times in close proximity to the president to cover him with his body in the event of such emergencies. That is his one job, is to take a bullet for the president. Or at least be prepared to.
And I mean, like, the moment is fast, right? In between Kennedy's throat wound to his head wound, right? It's a pretty fast time frame. It is interesting, though, that you are bringing this up, and he does not even do a single one thing.
He does not move.
Not once.
Even after the fatal headshot, he does not do anything to cover the president or the first lady.
Nope.
Or Governor Connolly. He doesn't do anything.
It's a little suspect. Yeah, that is sussy, dude. I never thought about that. Oh.
Some people argue that the lack of Secret Service protection occurred because Kennedy himself had asked the Secret Service to make itself discreet during the Dallas visit. However, Vince Palarama, who interviewed several of the Secret Service agents that were assigned to the Kennedy detail, disputes this. Palarama reports that the Secret Service driver, Sam Kinney, told him that the requests, such as removing the bubble top from the limousine, not having agents positioned beside the limousine's rear bumper, and reducing the number of Dallas police motorcycle outriders near the limousine's rear bumper, were not made by Kennedy.
Uh-oh. This was like a coup.
Because you know what would have, because you know what would have happened if they had the typical Secret Service agents positioned on the back of the car that are normally there? He wouldn't have been able to get shot in the back of the head.
Or the front right of it, or wherever, right?
I mean, he still could have been shot in the front right. But not in the back left.
They had to make it
plausible.
Dude, that is... See, and like, this is my fucking thing with this case, is like, it makes so much more sense that the CIA plans it this way, right? Because everything that you're saying is so right. Like, what is the Secret Service doing during this? Why aren't they acting to proper protocol and stuff like that? So strange. To the most liked president of all time, especially in that time period.
It's weird, dude.
It's fucking weird.
Conducting his own investigation with Boner Menninger in the book Mortal Error, The Shot That Killed JFK, Howard Donahue eventually decided that the bullet that struck Kennedy in the head had in fact been fired by United States Secret Service Special Agent George Warren Hickey Jr. from an AR-15 rifle carried in the car immediately following the president's vehicle. The alleged series of events is as follows. After the first shot, which hit the street, was fired, Hickey turns completely around and looks towards Oswald, who is on the sixth floor of the school book depository building. He turned his head. His turned head is documented in an AP photograph by James Altgens. Hickey reaches for his AR-15 under the seat, releases the safety, and begins to lift the gun. The second shot is then fired by Oswald, hitting the president and Texas Governor Connally. The president's car and the follow-up car containing Hickey suddenly speed up. This is attested to by Secret Service agent Clint Hill. Hickey, who is unstable because he's standing on the cushion of this car seat rather than the floor of the car, begins to fall back due to the acceleration of the vehicle, pulling the trigger of the AR-15. The gun happens to be pointed towards Kennedy at that exact moment, and the bullet strikes him squarely in the back of the head.
That's a bad day at work, dude. That's got to be the worst day. Because, I mean, like, I don't think that this happened, but if that did happen, that would be, like, the worst. Like, can I talk to you in my office?
Yeah.
We need to talk about what.
Yeah.
What happened?
So I think I think you know how this conversation is going to go, but we have to have the conversation. So let's go talk.
We got to let you go first and foremost.
Second of all, your family's never going to see you again. And third of all, you actually don't exist anymore. So,
do you want to go?
This is Alan Dulles.
This is Alan Dulles. Nice to meet you. Drink this tea, why don't you? Or this this punch out of the punch bowl. Hey.
Donahue was encouraged in his investigations by Ralph Reppert, who was a reporter for the Baltimore Sun. In 1977, Reppert published Donahue's theory in two articles, which appeared on Sunday, May 1st, and the following Sunday, May 8th, with the second article accompanied by an editorial. The two men were keen to collaborate on a book on the subject, but this was cut short by Rappert's ill health and subsequent death. Donahue's reconstruction of the trajectories of the shots that struck Kennedy and Governor Connally supported the single bullet theory for the second shot.
Dude.
Donahue decided that the impossible trajectory suggested by the Warren Commission was only necessary because there was an error in their positioning of Connally, and he also concluded that this was Oswald's second shot, with the first missing due to the misalignment of the rifle's telescopic sight, but with a ricochet fragment slightly wounding Kennedy, and that Oswald had not fired a third shot. The third cartridge found at the scene was a slightly bent and empty one that usually was kept in the rifle's chamber to keep it open.
So who domed the president? My guy?
The Secret Service agent. Yeah.
That's the third shot.
Yes.
But then there's still three shell casings at the book depository, but he's saying
because he was using one to keep, which nobody does. That's not a thing. No.
No.
That's not a thing that people do. Sorry.
Sorry.
Neither Donahue or Menninger commented on whether the Warren Commission's key finding that Oswald acted alone was correct or not. Menninger noted that the theory is consistent with Oswald being involved in a conspiracy, but the term cover-up is mentioned in the book rather than conspiracy.
Mm.
In The Echo from Dealey Plaza, Abraham Bolden, who, just as a note, was the first African-American on the White House Secret Service detail, claimed to have overheard agents say that they would not protect Kennedy from would-be assassins. Questions regarding the forthrightness of the Secret Service increased in the 1900s when the Assassination Records Review Boards, which was created when Congress passed the JFK Records Act, requested access to Secret Service records. The review board was told by the Secret Service in January of 1995 that in violation of the JFK Records Act, the Secret Service had destroyed protective survey reports that covered JFK's trips from September 24th all the way through November 8th of 1963.
What a convenient, convenient timeline to just have been deleted. You know what I mean? That is so fucking fire, dude. That's excellent. I love that. That's awesome. Good job. I'm glad you deleted that. What the hell, dude?
Yeah.
Just actual, like, evidence circumstances surrounding the assassination, they were like, you know, after the fact, I realized that this was a big event in American history. I'ma just delete that.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make any sense, dude.
It doesn't. And while I do not believe that the president was shot by the Secret Service, the angles don't work. It didn't happen. I'm sorry. But again, it's what we talked about at the end of the episode last week, that it puts a nice little bow on things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that is not to say that the Secret Service has not acted sussy around this whole thing. Just like the CIA, just like the FBI, they are all acting fucking weird.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a little bit more weirdness to talk about. But for now, my little confused Secret Service agents, that was part 8 of John Fitzgerald Kennedy.
Woo!
I think we maybe have... I'm going to try and do it in one, but we might have two more conspiracy episodes in this series. We're getting to the end here. And we just really appreciate you guys sticking with us during what will now officially be our longest series yet.
Oh, let's fucking go. We have now officially surpassed our longest series. Well, I guess our next episode, we will have officially surpassed it, right?
Yes.
With the amount of episodes. And can I just say, Kyle, congratulations on making it this far. And excellent work on this outline, my friend. Again, like, there were some things that I felt like became a lot more clear. I had not considered the Rockefeller connection, which I thought was a really, really interesting connection to make in this episode. And I'm really glad that we got to talk about Lee Oswald a little bit deeper in this episode. I thought you did an excellent work on this outline, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It was a fun one for the research. I found a lot of new threads. So
yeah.
Again, we got a little bit more to talk about. We might just do one really long episode next week, or it might be two more conspiracy episodes here. But we're getting to the bottom of the barrel a little bit, I think, finally. So
yeah, we're kind of almost at the end here.
Yeah, it's been a crazy ride.
Still a lot more craziness to go.
Yeah.
Let's be real.
So, yeah. And I can't wait to share it with you guys. As of course, we're always going to save our back-assward stance for the end of this series. I don't know if we've mentioned it yet, but we are actually going to do a full kind of retrospective at the end of this series. It's something we're going to try for some of our longer series. It's going to be like a bonus episode. It's not going to replace any of the main content on the channel, but we are going to sit down and have a real good talk about this when we get to the end of the series. And I am so looking forward to that.
I'm really looking forward to it too. There's a lot to talk about, even in just the 8 episodes that we've recorded so far, and let alone the episodes that we're about to record over the next couple of weeks and release over the next couple of weeks. This series is going to go well into February. You know what I mean? If this episode isn't already releasing in February, like, oh my God, you know what I mean? And so I've been having a great time, and I'm very much looking forward to talking about like every single line of this in our back-assward stance episode that we will release.
Let me see here. Yeah, it looks like this will come out the third
of February. Wow.
JFK is going to take us through February.
Yeah. Oh my word. That's crazy. There's only a couple Saturdays in February. It is the shortest month of the year.
It is. And we still get 4.
We still get 4. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for listening to the podcast, everybody.
Thank you so very much. It's part 8. Of a series that is not over yet. And I'm absolutely having the time of my life. This series has been amazing and so special. Thank you so much. It means a lot.
It really does. You can subscribe and review if you are enjoying the show. It really helps us out. And if you think someone else will enjoy the show, please, please, please share it with them.
Because word of mouth is the best way to spread that the Backastards podcast is now about to surpass their longest series on their own podcast. And you know.
You fucking know.
That the Backastards podcast is about to have a 9, 10, possibly 11 part series. And you also know the Backastards podcast is your favorite podcast. I mean, come on.
Come on. You can listen to our previous episodes for some more content, because you know you want more of our content. And I would recommend our episode on, I don't know how we haven't plugged this one more, the Kentucky Meat Shower.
Oh, the Kentucky Meat Shower was a great, great episode. It was actually one of the breaks that we inserted into Jonestown. When we were doing our Jonestown series, Carson Davies was on for that episode. That was a really fun episode. One of the most niche phenomenons we've ever talked about.
So fucking weird, dude.
I know. It was fun. Go give it a listen.
You can follow me and Arden on Twitter. I am at BackAssWordKyle. Arden is at Arden_Smith. And you can follow the podcast on all of your favorite social medias. Twitter at BackAssWordsPod. Instagram, BackAssWordsPod. TikTok, BackAssPod. And on Facebook, just search the BackAssWords Podcast. You can also check us out over on Patreon if you want to support us a little bit more. If you're appreciating the content, we would appreciate a little support. If you sign up for our top tier at $5 a month, you unlock not only our Discord chat, but you do also get a bonus show every single week, the Wednesday Phenomenon. And we have a ton of fun over there. Go ahead and join up, get some more content, and help us keep the lights on over here. I'm Kyle.
I'm Arden.
And we will see you next week, unless you're driving down the street and a Secret Service agent slips on a banana peel behind you and fucking domes you, then we probably won't see you next week. But the CIA will cover it up for you. So,
and just remember that when the CIA is covering it up, the last word that you should say before you get domed by the Secret Service is that Alan Dulles is responsible for this, so that you can stay safe, so that they can actually figure out who did it.
Or you could just scream, "I'm a patsy," so that you can stay weird.
The danger is real, my friends. There are a lot of things to scream in stressful situations, and some of them are helpful and some of them are not. And you need to be able to distinguish between the two. We'll see you next week.
We'll see you guys.
Stay safe.
Stay weird.
You
gotta get a cold one.
I had to get a boba.
Gotta get a cold one.
Dude, call me Lee Oswald, dude. I need a Coke. That's why I shot the president. That's why I lied about the curtain rods.
There's your sound bit. Holy shit.
Literally got up to go get a Coke. Fuck.
I love it. I love it.
Beep.